Welcome to Dithering on the Edge of Europe, the podcast about what it feels like to be living in the UK and on the edge of sanity. I'm Rich McCarthy, ex-teacher, ex-energy auditor, and real-life dad and house husband.
I'm Gorilla Boom. I'm European. I'm German. I'm a wife and I'm a mother, an academic, and also living here on the edge of sanity. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to look at Labour's promise.
So the next section is transport. Labour will build a sustainable, affordable, accessible and integrated transport system founded on the principle that transport is an essential public service. They said that there would be free bus travel for under 25s, which is, I think, a great idea in terms of getting people not to own cars. Encouraging people not to own cars, because if you can just go on the bus for free, then that seems to, certainly in a city area, it's easily done. But I think in the countryside, having free bus transport doesn't really make much difference. Maybe it would, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I think the key thing in relation to buses in this transport section is that they suggest that their councils will take control of buses. So increasing and expanding local services, reinstating 3,000 routes that have been cut, and particularly focusing on rural communities, which is, you know, the countryside and the rural communities have been decimated in relation to the rural buses.
Absolutely.
So the privatization has been a complete disaster.
For bus transport, yes.
Yeah. So it's logic. You know, it's not even left or right. It's logic that we need our public services to be, well, regulated at least by local authorities and furthermore, ideally
owned. To be run by local authorities. Because regulated, they are regular. There's supposed to be some sort of regulation by the local authority. Yeah. The local authority is supposed to oversee it at the moment, but it's very hard for it to do when they have to just get bids in from people and go with whatever people have bid.
And there's also another thing that I experienced when I was in Turku in Finland, because the local authority ran, I'm not sure about the ownership, but they certainly ran the bus services, the ferry services, some of the local, you know, what's called light rail services, mm-hmm. and the lend your bike, you know, the bikes that you can get anywhere on the street, and then the scooters as well.
Oh, yeah, the electric scooters, you talked about that.
Yes. And so having a sort of integrated transport system there where the local authority is able to balance, you know, if we have more scooters, we need less buses. If we have more buses, we need less cycles. You know, if we have a ferry service only in the summer, we need to put on more buses in the winter. It's so much easier. And even if you think about the workforce management, you know, having, again, this integrated system, I know that they were looking after the scooters as well as the cycles. So, you know, every morning, you know, the people were coming and getting some of the scooters and recharging them and bringing them back. You know, they had these local authority lorries, or I don't know what to call them, where they just packed them up and loaded them and unloaded them. And similar with the bikes, you know, it's so much easier if it's not fragmented into different kinds of private companies that all have to make their own.
But then that was a city again. Not a rural area, obviously.
Yeah, but it wasn't a big city. Absolutely.
Even small cities are cities and not rural areas.
But I mean, isn't that an argument for more integration then? If you integrated, publicly run services, whether that's public owned or not, then you can balance between these services much more, and that becomes even more important for more rural communities or smaller cities and towns.
And we think that, but I don't think they've argued that in this document. Maybe they have in other documents, but they haven't said anything about integrating transport. Public railways, they would re-nationalise rail transport, possibly through franchise expiry, it says. So as the franchise for one area runs out, they don't bother franchising it out again, which is absolutely the right thing to do, I would humbly suggest. To simplify and make fares more affordable, to rebuild the fragmented nature of the train service.
Can I just rant about the fares?
Yeah.
What I never understood about the British system, and it's not just rail, it's also buses, that you have the system where the return fare is just a bit more expensive
than
a single fare. So you always buy a return fare and you can't be very flexible with that. But it also means that the single fare is quite expensive. Whereas you go to Europe and quite often, you know, the return fare is double the amount of money than a single fare.
And people can understand that.
But the single fare, in the average, is cheaper than a single fare here.
Yeah, I can completely believe that. I think it makes sense thinking, well, if somebody's going to go somewhere, they need to get back. So they're probably going to come back in the same way. But it is twice as far to come back. So, and they might go there and get some kind of different journey with other people on the way back. They might want to walk home. They might want to cycle home. They might want to, all sorts of things could happen. So why not make it just easier by saying, okay, we're only going to charge you the amount for what you're actually asking for.
Yeah, right.
Instead of forcing you to come back on the same transport.
Then there's also a specific mention of the railway network and HS2. They are still for continuing HS2. You know, even the Conservatives have now, you know, there's sort of
some
rumblings
going
on in relation to, are we going to, you know, scrap HS2? And of course, we feel, you know, when we discussed also the Green New Deal about the Green Party, we discussed it as well, in terms of that money, that investment could now go into our regional transport, public transport infrastructure, also cycleways and things like that. So it would be repurposing that money to really achieve some of our CO carbon emission goals.
Yeah. And we now know that HS2 is going to cost over 100 billion. And that's out of a budget of 250 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mentioning continue HS2 up to Scotland. So that's going to be 200 billion easily. So they've blown virtually the whole budget on some HS2 and HS3, which is not very energy efficient because it's having things run really fast. It doesn't really serve the people because it doesn't have stations where people live. All sorts of terrible things are wrong with that, and they don't seem to recognise that.
Even if we were to continue supporting HS2, HS3 should be built before HS2. So the connectivity in the north should be a matter of priority. You know, to connect everything else to London is just going to suck out, again, energy and assets and workforce from the rest of the country to London. And what we don't need is an increase in a centralisation.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely.
I have my dramatic voice again, which I
do.
Was trying to avoid and which I can't emulate when I'm trying consciously, but I just noticed it.
Yes.
But we don't need that. So that's HS2, thumbs down, I should
absolutely
say.
Absolutely, huge, huge thumbs down, especially just HS2 to Scotland. Scotland probably don't want it. It's like, no, let's just reinforce the border instead and keep all those COVID people in England and...
Cycling and walking.
They would increase funding for cycling and walking and make towns... I struggled with this bit. They said that they would make it so that walking and cycling were the best choice in towns. How do you do that? You know, I think a good thing would be saying 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in towns and cities in built-up areas, which makes it... it makes it easier to walk and cycle because you're less fearful for your life. And also it means though they have to travel slower, so they don't see such a big change in speed between going in a car and cycling, maybe.
But, you know, you might not have grown in an environment where it was the best choice. You know, I've grown up in Germany, in an environment where no matter where we were in Germany, I could always walk or cycle safely to school. There were always cycle paths. There were always walking paths. Mm-hmm. You know, take a different country. Then we moved to America. You know, as you know, I spent 5 years as a teenager in America in two different states. No pathways at all. Everything was car-based. Mm-hmm. You know, it's as simple as that. And we know that also the story of Netherlands is that, I don't know if it was in the 70s or 60s, they decided that sort of cycling infrastructure. They basically said to every local authority, within 10 years, you will have to have connected all the schools to, you know, to the major urban areas in order for everyone to be able to cycle to school. Within 10 years, that was the case. And then, you know, by the time in the 80s, it was becoming famous as the cycling country of Europe.
Well, I came from a village, one of the biggest villages in Britain, but a village. So walking to school to primary school was easy. I went to a school 3.5 miles away, and it was that same main road, and it was that main road all the way, but it has a footpath all the way. Mm-hmm. So that was perfectly possible. And occasionally I had to walk home because the bus didn't stop for me and stuff like that. and I could cycle it. And I didn't feel frightened.
Was there a cycle path?
There was no cycle path, but it's a main road. But I strongly feel that we should teach people to cycle safely, and the way to cycle safely is to cycle in the middle of not the middle of the road, but the middle of the path. You know, you're on the left side of the road, so cycle in the middle of the left side of the road.
You're getting emotional when you talk about cycling.
Well, certain things perhaps.
Because, you know, we of course met cycling. You know, I know you were very much involved in cycling campaigns and cycling festivals and cycling.
You
were even featured.
I went to them. I wasn't so involved.
Well, you were organized.
I organized the Friends of the Earth cycle ride.
And you featured on a brochure about cycling to work and had a suit on.
I was wearing a suit and cycling into work. So he took some photos of me doing that.
Right, okay, cycling done. Car manufacturing is the next section.
Oh, we missed a bit, but okay.
But I'm going to move us on into a section which is both car manufacturing and taxi and private hire.
Yeah, okay. So they said they'd end the sale of combustion engine vehicles by 2030.
Good.
Great idea.
Brilliant.
But,
you know, it's not innovative. It's like we just have to do it. And every party is now saying that they have to do it.
Well, no, every party are not saying that they have to do it. So I think the Green Party are trying to get to that point, so they haven't said it yet.
Oh, right,
You know, it hasn't been passed at a conference or anything. The Conservatives said that they would end the sale of them by... end of the sale of it by 2035. The Green Party is saying there's a thing going through, going towards conference now, saying end sale of them by 2025 and them being able to be used on the road by 2030.
And it is actually quite late, because I remember when I was studying at university, the technology was already there. You know, most of the manufacturers were already researching into electric vehicles. They could have just switched already, but the market, you know, they just didn't, because the market allowed them to keep on using combustion engines.
Yeah, well, there was a big problem with batteries and a big problem with
I don't know, it
hydrogen.
Could have been solved. I remember, and I've probably bragged about that before, you know, there was a sort of solar race, but our university, which was the TH Darmstadt, so a technical university in Darmstadt, and my boyfriend was in the team which devised what was called, Flunder, which is a German word for a flat fish.
Yeah.
Because that solar car was, first of all, it was pink, and I painted the front right corner of that, and it had solar panels on it. And that won one race after the others. For 7 years, it ran almost six of the 7 years it won every race.
Because of the pink paint, do you think? Or your bit of pink paint?
Yes, because of my little
Even though you hate pink.
You know, that car is now in the Munich Technology Museum, you know, the biggest museum for technology in Germany. It's there now.
Wow. Yeah,
and it's absolutely
brilliant.
We should
go and see it at some point.
But I'm just saying that, you know, the technology was there and the battery research was there. And that was, 20, 25, 30 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, it should have been pushed a long, long time ago. And and I'm sure that if it had been pushed a long, long time ago, then battery technology would be more advanced. And I think battery technology has been pushed more by the mobile phone industry than anything else. And then Tesla came along saying, well, we're going to go big on batteries for cars. Reform taxis? But I'm not sure why they're reforming taxis.
Well, I think they're wanting to refuel the licensing authority jurisdictions, setting national minimum standards of safety and accessibility and updating regulations to keep pace with technological change and close loopholes to ensure a level playing field.
Get rid of Uber, basically.
That sounds like getting rid of Uber, yeah.
Or to have a proper version of Uber.
Exactly. Tweak Uber to consider vulnerabilities in the system.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, that would be very good. Vision Zero Road Safety. And this is where they would have zero deaths and serious injuries on road. Sounds great.
A vision of zero deaths.
Yeah, sounds great. But it, again, it doesn't say how. But if they did something like 20 miles an hour maximum speed in built-up areas, and then, but they haven't said that. And if they had a maximum speed on motorways of 50 miles an hour, which they haven't said, which the Green Party didn't say in their manifesto either, but they have in background papers.
The last section is air travel. Oh, it's not the last section, but there's a whole section about air travel.
Yeah.
And can I just quote you something? Labour recognises the Davies Commission's assessment of pressures on airport capacity in the southeast. Any expansion of airports must pass our tests on air quality, noise pollution, climate change obligations and countrywide benefits.
Yeah. Why don't they just say we're not going to expand airports?
Well, they're not saying it. That's the problem.
Yes. It seems crazy. When we're trying to address carbon dioxide emissions, why should we expand airports?
Yeah, as we know, we've rehearsed the figures. 70% of all flights are taken by 15% of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you would actually expect something in here that addresses that issue.
And also 52% of the population don't fly, didn't fly last year.
But, you know, there's something with the Labour Party that is so wedded also to industry to a certain extent.
Yeah, an expansion.
And I assume the unions in relation to the air
industries.
Air industry are quite strong, that they couldn't go down there. And that's a shame. And I think I wanted to put that in connection with this one sentence which they have in relation to sea travel. We will take action to end nationality-based discrimination in seafarer pay. That's the only thing that they have to say about sea transport. And I think in terms of our carbon, you know, challenges, shouldn't we consider air travel and sea travel in sync and actually, you know, wonder why is it that, you know, over the last 10 years, most of the ferry connections have stopped and that's a much more greener way to travel than air travel.
Yeah, I maybe, I don't know. You know. I haven't checked the figures for that because I'm just thinking of, you know, water is a much more viscous fluid than the air, and I presume it's less energy to go by boat from one place to another, as long as it was a straight line, than it would be to fly from one place to another, just because the power needed for the flying. But is it harder to push against water to do that than it is to push against air to do that once you've actually taken off? So I'm not entirely certain of that. I know that sort of, you know, the fastest boats go up onto onto catamaran hulls so that less of the surface of the boat is touching the water, and that certainly allows them to go faster. Whether that makes them more efficient or not, I'm not sure. Certainly it's possible to sail by boat, which you can't do in an aeroplane, but you could do in a dirigible. What's the other word for a dirigible?
I don't know.
Not a hot air balloon, but like a Zeppelin type thing.
Right. Okay, so I've got a figure here from a BBC article. So emissions from different modes of transport. So I've got here from a BBC website, fact checker, with sourced from DEFRA greenhouse gas conversion factors in 2019. So the biggest emitter is... flight is the highest, which is 254 grams.
Yeah.
Then long-haul flight is the next, then one passenger car, then bus, then a four-passenger car, then domestic rail, then coach. And then would come the ferry, and then comes Eurostar.
Yeah, so Eurostar is only 6 grams per person. Mm-hmm. And that's that's a foot passenger rather than a car being on a Eurofighter.
But going back to the ferry, you know, this is what I never understood, because every time I go to the continent, I look up what happened to our ferry. And if you remember, you know, we did various cycle holidays in Europe, whether it was Belgium or Netherlands, and we went by ferry. And we were so overjoyed when Scotland, you know, there was a new ferry route going to Amsterdam, when that was announced. But actually, you know, 7 years later, it was killed off again. And you kind of think, what happened in our world where we toppled towards climate catastrophe and we closed all the ferry routes and we doubled our flight routes? There's something really wrong about the leadership in a country that knew this moment was coming and saw it approaching.
And didn't do anything about it.
I'm in my dramatic voice again.
And as we can see, you know, going from ferry, 18 grams per foot passenger to 250 grams per foot passenger for the short haul flight. Obviously, we've multiplied the effects by 10, 13 times as much carbon dioxide.
Yeah. And, you know, I would love to go with the ferry, even if it takes two nights. You know, when I went to Turku in Finland, and of course, that's quite a long journey. You know, you have to go around Denmark and go. It's quite convoluted. But, you know, I would have done it if it wouldn't have incorporated four changes, 3 days, two hotel nights. And if there would be a ferry that just, you know, goes
masses,
once
masses
a week.
Of planning.
You know, brilliant. Would love to do that. And if I would love to do that, I think there would be more people loving to go by ferry.
Because you're not the most relaxed traveller, are you?
No.
No. By any stretch of the imagination.
We're not going to talk about that. Right. Okay. So that's the transport section. So there are some things missing. I think, what do you think for you? What are the biggest pluses? What are the biggest minuses? I mean, for me, that they still support air travel, that they don't have a section around ferry travel is a shame. But I do like their sort of public ownership considerations. Right. So what's your takeaway about the transport section? What do you like? What do you not like?
Okay. I like the inclusivity, and I like bringing extra services online to a certain extent. I don't like of not saying we've got to reduce airports. We've got to reduce air travel. So therefore, there's absolutely no reason to expand any airports anywhere. Now, why don't they say that? So that would be an important thing.
So that was transport.
The next
time?
Part, environment and animal welfare and the non-existent regional development, we'll cover on the next episode.
So that's it. That's all for us.
Yeah, that's
week.
It for this week.
Feel free to follow us on Twitter on Dithering on the Edge, Dithering E.
And have a safe and fun week ahead. As fun as you can, when really we're all still kind of technically in lockdown, although the government is wanting us not to be in lockdown.
Yeah. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.